With plenty of TVs and beer options, make Walters your spot for the Caps playoff run. Game 3 is Friday night at 7 p.m. as they look to avoid falling into an 0-3 hole. Walters is located across the street from Nationals Park.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The stretch, runner second and third. The pitch, swung on, bouncer toward the middle, and on through the drawn infield to base hit. Lux has scored. Rounding third, coming home is Baez, and holding it first with a single to the left of second. A two-run single for Mookie Betts, RBIs 20 and 21. And the Dodgers play two here at the top of the second with one out. It's the Dodgers 3, and the Nationals nothing. Pitch, swinging a ground ball toward the hole. Diving is Garcia. Can't get it out and a right for a hit. This will score both runners. Throw to the plate. Too late to get Muncy. Smith scores in front of him. A ground ball through the hole by Lux. Drives in two more. And a strike away from getting out of it. It's a two-run single for Lux, driving in his third and fourth runs of the year. And it's now the Dodgers 6 and the Nationals 2. Field back, pitch to Freddie Freeman, lined into left center field. That'll be a base hit. Fielded by Rosario on a hop. Betts has scored. Otani speeding to the plate. Slides in as the throw is cut off behind the mound by Lipscomb. And so Freddie Freeman with a base hit, his first of the night, scoring Betts and Otani. And the Dodgers have played it three runs here in the ninth inning. It's now Los Angeles 11 and Washington 2.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Thursday, April 25th, 2024, which is the day of the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft. Are the Washington Commanders about to do what the Washington Nationals did last year? Spend a number 2 overall pick on a star player from LSU. We shall see, along with MassinSports.com Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman, who was at Nationals Park. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. Well, the Nats very impressively won 2 of 3 games at the Los Angeles Dodgers last week, but the Nats now are in danger of being swept by the Dodgers this week. Tuesday evening, a 4-1 loss. Wednesday evening, an 11-2 loss, dropping the Nats to 10-13 in this regular season. The Nats in this game went 0 for their last 22. So you could say that the offense was a bit of a problem, but so too was the team starting pitching. Jake Irvin, now he in his last start, which also was against the Dodgers, very good. Irvin in a 2-0 Nats win at the Dodgers the previous Wednesday, April 17th, 6 scoreless innings, 6 strikeouts. But Irvin in this 11-2 loss to the Dodgers on Wednesday evening got hammered. 6 runs in 4 2/3 innings. He gave up a whopping 12 hits. Coming up later in the show, another Nats Chat podcast shout out. If you would like to deliver a shout out to someone, email Tim Shovers at natschatpodcast@gmail.com. Mark, the Nats, of course, are rebuilding. They, in this season, have been competitive in the majority of their games, but the Nats in this game on Wednesday evening were not competitive.
No, this is probably the low point so far in 23 games this year, and you hope it doesn't last, and it's just a blip on the radar. But, I mean, man, you can dig through this one and try to find something to be positive about. There really wasn't much of anything to get excited about in this game. And, you know, Jake Irvin digs him into a hole, of course, and that hurt. especially when he had pitched so well last week against the exact same lineup. So you want to say, okay, from a lineup standpoint, you're facing an uphill battle all along, and that's a tough spot to be in. But man, oh man, after the bottom of the second, when it looked like they might have something going, they had the bases loaded, Landon Knack, the Dodgers rookie, was all over the place. Joey Meneses draws a bases loaded walk. They may, you know, it's 3-2. It's a very competitive game, maybe a chance at a big inning. And then Luis Garcia grounds out on the first pitch. The inning ends, and they did not have another base runner the entire night after that point. That was almost impossible to believe that that was the case. There were some feeble at-bats the rest of the night from this team, and I get it. This isn't a lineup that's supposed to score a lot of runs, but boy, you got to do better than what they put forth from the third through the ninth inning in this game.
And it felt like a game that might be a game in which the Nats hit when they scored the two runs in the bottom of the second inning. You just said to yourself, all right, you know, we might be in for a slugfest. I mean, it was 3-2 after two innings to say, okay, here we go. And instead, 11-2 is the final score. How about the discrepancy in hits in this game? 23. That is not a hit disparity that you see often. A team being 17 hits better than another team in a game. And yet that was the case in this game. So Jake Irvin, like I said, he was so good in that game at the Dodgers the previous Wednesday. We talked about this. It was going to be very interesting to see if Irvin could do as he did on April 24th, as he did on April 17th. Same team, a very good team. Can you do that team the way you did him in that initial outing? And the answer was no, unfortunately. Like we said, 6 runs, 4 2/3 innings, 12 hits, which were comprised of 5 doubles and 7 singles. And the thing is, Irvin got hit really hard. 7 of the hits that he allowed each had an exit velocity of at least 99.7 miles per hour per Statcast. He issued 1 walk. He recorded 3 strikeouts. He over the 4 2/3 innings threw 103 pitches, 66 strikes, 37 balls. Compare that with his pitch count in that game at the Dodgers last Wednesday, the previous Wednesday. 73 pitches to throw 6 scoreless innings. And remember, he had that insane strikes to balls ratio of 54 to 19. Totally different story in this game at Nationals Park on Wednesday evening.
And that was really the key, the strikes. He was consistently ahead in the count last week, throwing strike one, putting himself in an advantageous position to be able to get some very good hitters out. And in this game, he was consistently falling behind in the count, driving up the pitch count and allowing the Dodgers to sit back and wait for something over the plate. And when they got it, they hit it hard. Now, obviously, really talented lineup, maybe the toughest one he'll face all year. They're getting a second look at him in a week. It's why it's always such a challenge for anyone to face the same team twice in a row like that. So give the Dodgers some credit. But I'll tell you what, Jake was pretty down on himself after this one. He felt like he was trying to be a little too fine, maybe didn't just trust the fact that he had done so well last week and thought, I've got to be even better than that. And what you saw, the misses were way off the plate. Non-competitive pitches, especially his fastball, he was pulling it and everything was going like away from the right-handed batter where they didn't have to think about taking a swing at it. And so he dug himself into a hole to begin with. And that's the last lineup in the world you can even attempt to do that with. You're just asking for trouble. And he was in trouble basically the entire night. There wasn't a clean inning in there. You know, he battled. I mean, he was in theory one pitch away from leaving with it, you know, as a 4-2 game and at least giving them a chance. And he couldn't make that one last pitch. But boy, it felt like an uphill climb all night long for him.
And, you know, in these many games for the Nats against the Dodgers already this season, we've seen the Nats do a pretty good job against the Dodgers' big boys. I know Mookie Betts had that big game last week, but like by and large, it has felt like the Nats have handled the big bats of the Dodgers pretty well. This was a game in which that did not happen. Like this was a game in which Shohei Ohtani had his way. This was a game in which Will Smith had his way. You know, you look at Irvin and he's had kind of an up and down season so far. If just go through his pitching lines in this regular season, 3 runs, 5 innings, 4 runs, 6 innings, 1 run, 6 innings, 6 scoreless innings. And now what happened in this most recent game on Wednesday evening. I think what separates good starting pitchers from not so good starting pitchers basically is consistency. Because if you're a major league starting pitcher, you can have good games. Patrick Corbin has good games. He just had a pretty good game, you know? So it's not so much like, are you capable of going out there and pitching well? It's, start in, start out, can you pitch well? And it really does feel like that is the next step for Irvin and Mackenzie Gore and even Josiah Gray, although he demonstrated some of that last season. But can you get to a point to where it's no longer nice if you're good in a start? Are you consistently good in starts? You know, are we no longer like hoping that you're going to be good in a start? Are we expecting you to be good in a start? That really is where you want to see the likes of Irvin and Gore get to.
Yeah, and that's the development. I think we've talked about that's really the big thing, I think, for Mackenzie Gore this year above all else. And then I think Jake Irvin being his second big league season, you want to see a little more of it, but you're probably not expecting it to be quite as dominant as it was. Nobody's going to have their stuff every 5 days. The key is on those nights when you don't have it, can you still find a way to be effective, to get the job done, and at least give your team a chance without getting lit up? And like I said, he was close. You know, sometimes it only takes a couple of quality pitches in the right moment to turn what ends up as a bad start into an okay start. He was not able to do that. This turned into a bad start because of that. And that's growth and development and facing the same lineup over and over again and learning what your strengths are and what you can change and what you don't need to change. So you hope that comes with time. Let's remember, as great as he was the last two games, this is not somebody who's supposed to be a frontline big league starter. It would be great if he turns into that, but you know, that's not the reputation coming in. The way he handled it, like I said, he was pretty down on himself. I'll be real interested now to see the next one. Now, I think it's going to be against the Marlins, a slightly easier challenge perhaps for that. But let's see, can he go out there and actually now go back and recapture what he had before, throw strikes and get quicker outs? If he can do that, good sign. And maybe this is just one bad game in a string of good starts. The thing you worry about is it building on itself. And now all of a sudden you get into a bad rut. We've seen that from like Josiah Gray at times. You hope that that's not where Jake Irvin goes after this one.
Well, it's funny what happened with Nats pitching in this game. Irvin was not good. The Nats bullpen for a while was doing pretty well. Ultimately, four Nats relievers combined to allow 5 runs in 4 1/3 innings. But the first two Nats relievers in this game were just fine. Derek Law, 1 1/3 scoreless innings, 2 swinging strikeouts. Dylan Floro tossed a scoreless top of the 7th. But then Tanner Rainey and Matt Barnes happened, and things did not go so well with them in the game. Rainey in the top of the 8th allowed 2 runs on a solo homer, 2 doubles, and a wild pitch. He also issued 2 walks. He, in that inning, threw 33 pitches. And then Matt Barnes in the top of the 9th allowed 3 runs on a double and 3 singles. As bad as Irvin was, the game didn't really become like a laugher until those 8th and 9th innings. And it was tough with Rainey because he actually had been a bit better in his most recent outings, but man, he was back to struggling in this outing. That was not good.
We're getting into concern territory here, I think, with him. The velocity has not come back. Command is not there. He's throwing 93 miles an hour over the plate. Against a team like this, I mean, forget it. You're not going to have any chance to do that. So I am getting a little concerned here. And you know, what do you do there? You just keep waiting for these low leverage spots to put him in and hope that he figures it out? Or do you have to consider some other kind of move here at some point? Matt Barnes got lit up by Ohtani the night before. He comes in and, you know, the game's already over. Just go out there, throw strikes, get out of the inning and get it over with. And instead, he has a really long inning where you're just adding insult to injury. And I think this game, more than any other, I came away with this thought that I've had a few times already this year. Boy, wouldn't it be nice to have somebody that when you're down 6-2 in the 7th and 8th innings, you can just give the ball to and say, hey, go finish it out for us. Whatever happens, fine. You're going to save the rest of the bullpen at least. The long man, the mop-up man, they don't have that guy. And I think it's coming back to haunt them in some ways. You know, why is Matt Barnes pitching back-to-back days when it's a blowout like this? Because they don't really have anybody else. And as you said, they used 5 relievers the other night. And so you're in this spot unless you want to throw Kyle Finnegan in garbage time, which you don't want to have to do. I really felt like this was a prime example of how much they are missing that one guy that every bullpen needs who can just give you 3 innings in a blowout game, usually effective. And if nothing else, it takes the pressure off the other guys and lets you save them up for another day.
Well, I don't get why Dylan Floro only throws 1 inning. I mean, he threw a scoreless inning, 15 pitches. He couldn't have given them a second inning. Like that's what I don't get with the bullpen management, is why Davey doesn't try to push some of these guys a little further. Now, I get it. Sometimes these guys just are not very good and you don't really have much of a choice but to get the guy out of the game. But in a spot like that, it's a game that you're probably not going to win. Floro just gave you a pretty economical scoreless inning. Why can't he pitch a second inning?
Yeah, I don't know how much he's done it in his career, if that's how they look at him. I mean, I think he's actually been one of their more effective guys. I think I would consider him like the fourth reliever, maybe behind Finnegan, Harvey, and Weems. So maybe you're saving it thinking, hey, if we are in a position to win the series finale, I want him to be available. So I get that. But, you know, they just don't have multi-inning guys. They certainly don't have a three-inning guy. And I feel like the majority of teams they face so far, there's at least one game where the other team will do it. The Dodgers did it with Ryan Yarbrough in this one. He's been an opener. He was the bulk reliever for that game last week when they had the bullpen game. They don't have anybody like that that can just eat up some innings at the back end of a lopsided game. And I think it's going to come back to haunt them. I really do. I get the relievers they had coming out of spring training. They liked that group. Most of them were veterans and one inning guys, and that's fine. But over 162, you do need somebody that just eats up innings. And you wonder if they get to a point. I know he's pitched really well as a starter here, but maybe they get to a point when everybody else is healthy. And if Mitchell Parker continues to do well, maybe you actually get to a point where Trevor Williams can be that guy. Because that is a valuable spot. It's unheralded, but it's a valuable spot in the bullpen to have.
You know, we joke about Paolo Espino, but they do miss him. I also would throw out Mason Thompson. We saw him at times utilized in a way in which he would throw more than an inning. Now, he was inconsistent and he has had injury trouble. So, you know, you can't necessarily say that he would be a staple in the bullpen as a long man this season, but he could be. You know, when he's right, he could be someone like that. And to your point, they don't have anyone like that right now. Hey guys, Al Galdi for Window Nation. Are you frustrated by higher and higher heating and cooling bills? Have you finally had enough of the frigid drafts or moisture coming through your windows? We'll take a listen to the great offer being extended by Window Nation to listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. If your windows are cracked or leaking and or won't open or stay open, now is the time to call Window Nation, which is offering the following deal to listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com and make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast. Upgrade the look, feel, and value of your home with great new Window Nation windows. Window Nation is the best, and take advantage of the offer. Two free windows for every two windows that you buy, plus zero down, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 months. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. And make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Here's your James Wood update for the game played on Wednesday night as AAA Rochester beat the St. Paul Saints 7-5. Wood hit second and played left field, went 1-for-4 with a double and a walk. His OPS is at 892. By the way, hitting behind him and at DH, the recently promoted Stone Garrett as his rehab continues, 0-for-5 on the evening. Now back to the show.
3-2 to Senzel, swung on, hit in the air to deep left center field. This is way back. This ball may go. It is gone. Goodbye. Into the bushes at the far end, the right end of the visitor's bullpen in left center field. Bang, zoom goes Nick Senzel with his second home run of the homestand. And the Nationals are on the board here with a two-out solo shot in the bottom of the second. It's now Los Angeles 3 and Washington 1.
The Nats offense in this 11-2 loss to the Dodgers on Wednesday evening, not good, like we said. 0 for the team's last 22. The Nats for the game, just 2 runs, just 3 hits. Did work 3 walks, but went 0-for-2 with runners in scoring position. Just 2 at-bats with runners in scoring position the entire game. The Nats did homer. Nick Senzel, he is the Nats starting third baseman and number 8 batter, 1-for-3 with a solo homer. He and the Nats, a 2-run second, a 2-out full count solo homer to left center to cut the Nats deficit to 3-1. Joey Meneses as the Nats starting designated hitter and number 3 batter, 1-for-3, single and a bases loaded walk. Meneses in that Nats 2-run second drew a 2-out bases loaded walk to cut the Nats deficit to 3-2. Like we said earlier, it was odd. The Nats had that 2-run second inning. A 2-run second inning in which everything happened with 2 outs. 2 outs occurred, then Senzel homered, Trey Lipscomb walk, more on him momentarily, CJ Abrams hit by pitch, Jesse Winker walk, Joey Meneses bases loaded walk. So you're in business, another game in which the Nats are drawing walks, you feel pretty good about things. And then that was it. The offense like evaporated over the course of the rest of the game.
And how did it happen? And it feels like this happens all the time, and it's the most agonizing thing to watch. After a pitcher is on the ropes, walking the bases loaded, actually walking in a run, what happens? The next guy comes up and hits the first pitch and makes an out and ends the inning. And I don't want to pick on Luis Garcia. I think he's been quite good this season. We've talked about the improvements he's made and how pleasant of a development that's been. But boy, if you're going to swing at the first pitch after that sequence, you better hammer it somewhere and you better get a hit out of it. And instead, he hit a ground ball to second base. That was tough. And there shouldn't be a carryover from that. But boy, it felt like that just sucked all the energy out of the place. And they did literally nothing the rest of the game.
Well, I mentioned Trey Lipscomb. He is back. He is the Lane Thomas replacement, in at least in terms of roster maneuvering. Alex Call did not get the call. James Wood did not get the call. So the Nats on Wednesday afternoon announced having placed Lane Thomas on the 10-day injured list with a sprained left MCL that he suffered in game 1 of this series, that 4-1 loss to the Dodgers on Tuesday evening. Him going on the IL certainly is not shocking. It certainly felt like that's where we were headed when we last spoke on the podcast. We talked about what a corresponding roster move might be. Maybe Alex Call, maybe, possibly, James Wood. But the Nats instead called up an infielder who they just demoted. They just sent Trey Lipscomb back down to Rochester. April 15th was when the Nats optioned Lipscomb back to Rochester. But he now is back up in the majors. He, for this game on Wednesday evening, was the Nats starting first baseman and number 9 batter, 0-for-2 with a walk. He had that aforementioned walk in the 2-run second. So a lot of things to get into here. But I guess with Lane Thomas, in reading what you wrote on massinsports.com, sounds like given the circumstance, this was a best case scenario.
That's the way they were approaching it. So look, he's not on crutches. The knee was kind of wrapped up because he was having some electronic stim treatment given to it. But he's not in a brace. He doesn't need surgery. They're not saying an official timetable. You know, it's going to be a little while. I think we're talking weeks, you know, probably a month, I would guess, at least for that. But all things considered, I think they were nervous. It could have been a lot worse than that when you saw the way the knee bent on that awkward slide. So I think they're relatively encouraged about that. So that's good. Now, what they did then to replace him, I'll be honest, I didn't see that one coming. And there may still be more to come. As we said the previous day, you don't want to call up James Wood until you know for sure how long Lane Thomas is going to be out. Well, if he really is going to be out a month or so, maybe that is a move that is forthcoming at some point here in the next week or so. Although Davey, when he was asked about it, I mean, he pretty much kind of said that wasn't really under consideration yet.
No, there was, you know, he's doing well. Don't get me wrong. But we want him to get at bats in AAA and continue to do what he's doing. We're going to see James Wood, no doubt about it. But we just want him to continue to, you know, really feel good about himself and get him going.
Well, he got off to a great start down there. He is only 6 for his last 35, 13 strikeouts. So he is in a little bit of a funk there. And I think the feeling is when you make that move, you better be 100% sure that he's ready to go. And you don't make it just because somebody else got hurt, but because he's truly ready for it. The thing about calling up Lipscomb is it creates this positional domino effect that I think left them with not exactly an ideal defensive alignment for this game. And I'm really interested to see how they move along with this, if this is the alignment we see night in and night out, or if it's going to be kind of something different every day.
So, you know, you look at what the outfield was for Wednesday evening: Jesse Winker in left, Eddie Rosario in center, Joey Gallo in right. We have seen this reluctance to play Gallo in the outfield. It sounds like now finally the Gallo in the outfield scenario has been unshackled, and we will be seeing Joey Gallo, a multi-time Gold Glove winner as a corner outfielder, playing in the outfield. The other guy who's part of this is Rosario, who has barely been playing, in large part because he has been struggling. So yes, it is interesting. It's also worth mentioning this. The Nats have now 3 different outfielders out due to injury: Victor Robles, Stone Garrett, and now Lane Thomas. So the Nats are getting hit fairly hard at that outfield spot. I also would inject this into the mix. We, a few weeks ago, saw Lipscomb before a game doing some outfield work. Do you think we will see Lipscomb in the outfield at all? Or do you think this just means more outfield time for the likes of Gallo and Rosario?
It is possible. It is something that Davey has mentioned as a potential thing. Now, he was at first base on this game. I don't think he's necessarily going to be there every day. He is going to be somewhere in the lineup. That's the whole idea. If he's here, he's got to play. So there could be some time at third, some time at second, maybe a game here or there in the outfield. But I think at least at the moment, as they currently have this set up, he's going to be at first base most days. And that to me is a surprising part of this. Not that he can't do it. He made a great play on Shohei Ohtani's scorcher, started a really nice 3-6-3 double play. He also dropped a bounced throw from C.J. Abrams, one of those kind of tweeners that you can tell a more experienced first baseman is going to know whether to go after it or to sit back and wait for it. So maybe with time, he can do that. Now, Lipscomb has done a great job, really even going back to college, at just playing wherever he's needed and learning the position and getting very comfortable there. So I don't doubt that over time, that he can become a competent first baseman. But if this really is a part of your future, don't you want to put him where he's most comfortable and get him into a routine and say, okay, this is where you're going to be for us? Do you really want to turn him into this jack of all trades, you know, fill in whatever hole needs to be plugged right now kind of guy as a rookie? Maybe that's what they ultimately see him as. But I've got no problem with Gallo playing the outfield because I think he's a very good outfielder. What I don't understand is, with who they had in the lineup for this game, why not put Joey Meneses at first, Trey Lipscomb at third, and just have Nick Senzel DH? I'm not sure why they didn't approach it that way. Maybe they will at times, but reading between the lines, it kind of sounded like Lipscomb's going to get most of the time at first base now.
That is surprising. I mean, that's not anything that anyone was anticipating.
Tim Shover's here to tell you about Game Time. This summer at the Anthem, shows include The Struts, Black Eyed Peas, and Shaky Graves. If you're interested in finding tickets to any of these shows, make sure to check out the Game Time app. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you the complete peace of mind with your purchase. See the view from your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. Buy tickets in seconds with 2 taps. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
The pitch. Swing and a drive hit in the air to deep left center field. Rosario back, way back at the fence, and it is off the fence and in play. This will score one run. Betts stopping at third, and Ohtani was around second, had to slam the brakes on with Betts stopping at third. Does that one look like it was going to leave the park, and it hit up against the fence? So the third double for Ohtani, he drives in his second run of the game and 15th of the year. And the Dodgers adding on to their lead here in the top of inning number 9. It's now Los Angeles 9 and Washington 2.
You know, it's interesting, too. We are less than a month into this regular season, and the Nats off a 2023 season in which they enjoyed pretty good health, right? Certainly from an in-season standpoint. We had the Cade Cavalli, Tommy John prior to the season. But you think about last season, in-season injury. I mean, Victor Robles got hurt, yes. Stone Garrett got hurt, yes. But like beyond those two, not much. The Nats enjoyed some very good injury luck last season. Well, look now this season. I mentioned the three outfielders currently on the 10-day injured list. Garrett, due to the injury that he suffered last season, but Robles has been on the 10-day IL since April 4th, left hamstring strain. Lane Thomas now is on the 10-day IL, sprained left MCL. We have Kaibert Ruiz on the 10-day IL, influenza. You have Josiah Gray on the 15-day injured list with his right elbow slash right forearm flexor strain. Robert Garcia is on the 15-day IL with influenza. We mentioned Mason Thompson. That was prior to the start of the season, but he's on the 60-day injured list, Tommy John surgery. My point would be this. This does not seem to be a second consecutive season in which the Nats are enjoying very good injury luck, and it's hard to do that. I mean, and this is across all sports. Usually when you have a season in which you enjoy good health, the following season is not the same. Like, it's hard to have that season after season. And so, you know, with the caveat of we're less than a month into this season, so, you know, who knows where this takes us. The injuries have happened here at a pretty good clip. Nick Senzel missed time due to injury not long ago. So the Nats have had to deal with some absences here so far.
Yeah, and they knew coming in that this was probably going to be the case. You hope it's not, but they knew they were very fortunate last year, especially on the pitching side of things. It's why they made a point to try to build up what they thought would be better pitching depth to account for injuries. I suppose the one saving grace, you just mentioned the outfielders who are hurt. Well, if there's one position they can afford to have injuries, it's probably outfield because they're not even calling up the top prospects. They have others who can fill in for now until they decide those guys are ready. So I guess they can get by, you know, in spite of all this. But yeah, you hope there's not more. You hope some of these guys start coming back soon. I think Kaibert Ruiz, I think we're going to see maybe Thursday, probably by Friday at the latest after playing a couple games on rehab. That'll be nice. You know, maybe Robles kind of forgot about him, but maybe he can get himself back in. He's with the team doing baseball. Well, he's running. I don't know how much baseball activity he's done yet, but maybe he can get going here soon and they can bring him back and help fill the gap. But it is certainly more than they dealt with last year. But I think deep down they knew that was probably going to be the case this year.
And I do want to say this about James Wood. And look, I want him up at the major league level. I think that's going to provide so much excitement. I think it's going to generate a good bit of interest in this national season. But the majors are different than the minors. And I think a really interesting case study is what's happening with Jackson Holliday. So Jackson Holliday is the consensus number one prospect in baseball. He got promoted by the Orioles from AAA Norfolk to the major league level a few weeks ago. He had been tearing it up for AAA Norfolk. He has really struggled so far at the major league level. Jackson Holliday is 2-for-34 with 2 singles, 2 walks, and 18 strikeouts. His OPS at the major league level for this regular season is 170. That would be a bad batting average. That's his OPS, 170. So you can do really well at AAA. The majors is a different ballgame, so to speak. Now, everyone's different. Every situation is different. Just because Holliday has struggled doesn't mean that Wood would struggle. But Jackson Holliday is one of the few prospects in baseball who is considered to be better than James Wood. And Holliday has gotten humbled big time these last few weeks. And so, yeah, as much as we want to see James Wood, I think it is important to remember that just because he has overall done well at AAA, it doesn't guarantee anything at the major league level.
Right. And just remember where they still are as a franchise. They're not in win now mode. The Orioles are. So you said, hey, let's get our best possible players up here. And you understand why you maybe rush a prospect like that. Nationals don't have to do that. And I know that's frustrating to fans. I know there are many of you out there that want to start seeing these guys who have a future and don't want to just keep watching Eddie Rosario take at bats. I get that. But you can't force the issue if they're not 100% ready. And the last thing you want to have happen is call up a big time prospect, have him really struggle early on, and now be confronted with that decision. Are we going to keep him up here and let him ride it out? Or do we have to think about sending him back down? And for the situation they're in as a team right now, I understand why they're taking the slow and steady course with this. I don't fault them for that. It can be frustrating. Yes, the time will come. There's not really a whole lot of harm in giving him another week or so. Maybe that's all that it is. Maybe more than that. See if he gets out of that first slump that he's in at AAA, gets going a little bit more. And eventually, when the time is right, he is going to be up here. And we said on opening day, this year isn't about who's on the roster at the start. It's about who's on the roster at the end. It's something you have to keep reminding yourself, I think, throughout the course of this season.
We have a shout out to deliver. Al Roach wants to wish his wonderful wife, Joyce, a happy birthday today. Joyce, you are the love of my life, and I look forward to celebrating many more birthdays with you. Go Nats. And we echo those sentiments. Happy birthday to Joyce. It's actually my wife's birthday, so maybe my wife and Joyce should get together and tear up the town. But hope Joyce has a wonderful birthday.
Very nice of you to celebrate your wife's birthday by staying up late recording a podcast.
Yes, yes. She appreciates that very much. Trust me on that. If you would like a shout out, email Tim Shovers. The email address is natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on X as well, @Nats_chat. So Nats try to avoid the three-game sweep. Game three against the Dodgers, Thursday afternoon, 4:05. Mackenzie Gore will be the Nats starting pitcher. And we talked about this a bit in the previous installment of the show. But, you know, I don't want to overhype this, but this is an interesting matchup for sure. Gore is coming off a rough outing, so it would be nice to see him bounce back and do well against what clearly is a formidable lineup. Jake Irvin certainly found that out.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. Let's see how does he fare against the big boys. It's not like this is make or break for him in his career, but boy, it'd be nice to see him do what we've seen at times him do against a really good lineup like that and make a statement and maybe get some run support, although the Nats lineup is facing another tough one in Yamamoto, who we're going to see for the first time, the highest paid pitcher in Major League history, and he got that contract before ever throwing a big league pitch. Just astounding when you stop and think about that.
It really is. The Dodgers can spend like few teams in sports can spend. We have come to know that. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is @NatsChatPodcast. And please click on the thumbs up button. And please click on subscribe. Doesn't cost you a thing and helps us out a lot. We have a website that we invite you to check out too, NatsChatPodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.